It is an exciting time here as we enter into the second week of April. And, man, it has just been a busy time in the world of sports as March Madness just officially wrapped up on Monday night. Congratulations to the Florida Gators as they are the 2025 NCAA tournament champs. It was certainly a fantastic game on Monday night. Very exciting to watch. Masters week, for a lot of folks, myself included, one of the more exciting times of the year. Certainly, I was talking with a buddy about this, but you're not going to find a lot more graceful and peaceful sporting events than the Masters. The Masters is certainly one of those things where, all right, once you're off of work, you can kick your feet up, watch a little Masters, maybe even take a nap in between. It's just certainly a peaceful event. But we are not here to talk about the Masters. We're not here to talk about other sports that may be going on. We're here to talk college football because, as you are well aware, it is April. But just because it is April, don't buy into the philosophy that this is the offseason, because it's not. Offseasons are a thing of the past. There's a lot to unpack, specifically in the courtroom, as I hinted at during the last show that I put out for you guys. I'm going to try to get through that as quickly as I can, because there are two specific things that I want to unpack that did happen in the courtroom / the meeting room. I will get to that. Also, on the football side of things, we got to fix the transfer portal, guys. We got to fix the transfer portal. It is getting out of control. I will touch on that. And it will be a spicy conversation. And also, some recruiting news from teams that I have talked about in the past. What are they doing in the recruiting world? We will get to that. Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Make sure if you haven't already, please subscribe to The Game Nashville, where you can access all of the podcasts that we are currently putting out here in The Game. You cannot just only listen to the Air Raid, but there are other phenomenal podcasts that some of my coworkers are putting out, and I would highly encourage you to check those out. But as for this show, I highly recommend that you continue to be dialed into the Air Raid, because we are pumping out content. And again, it's been a busy time, but things are about to get cranked up here as we continue to navigate throughout the spring and into the summer months. Okay, let's go ahead and get into that courtroom talk, because as I discussed on the last show that I did, and this was at the very tail end, I didn't talk about it exclusively. I didn't really go into a whole lot of depth, but there is a reason for that. I just told you to keep your eyes peeled for April 7th, when there would be a meeting or a courtroom meeting surrounding the house settlement. And if you remember what the house settlement is, basically this is the settlement that will pay back around $2.8 billion to former athletes who, if NIL was introduced earlier, would have been able to profit off of their name, image, and likeness. And this is going to go all the way back to athletes from, I believe the starting date will be 2016. If this house settlement is passed, that will open up the door for schools to directly pay their athletes with a given salary cap of $20.5 million. And that money just doesn't specifically go to football players, but it goes to athletes across all sports at a specific institution. So that is up to the school how they would like to divvy up that money. But on April 7th, Monday, there was a courtroom debate surrounding the House settlement. Basically, it was a 7-hour discussion that ended with a, we'll continue this conversation at a later date. You know how things go with court rulings. They typically aren't fast processes. They take a while. They take their time. I didn't expect to get a settlement specifically on Monday, but we are getting closer. Again, these things typically take a while when it involves a courtroom. But I can't begin to explain how landscape-changing this will be, not just for college football, but college athletics. And whether you believe it will be a good or a bad thing, it is going to be landscape-altering. Basically, I don't feel like getting into all the legalese with this because I'm not a judge, I'm not a lawyer, nor do I claim to be. And I don't think that I am remotely qualified to explain any of this to you, but I'm going to try my best because, as you know, college athletics, people are suing the NCAA left and right. So I try to familiarize myself with as much of this as I can. But again, as I explained, the NCAA has agreed to pay back roughly $2.8 billion in damages to past and current athletes dating back to 2016. This will open up the door for the salary cap, the $20.5 million that will be divvied up among athletes at specific institutions. This is kind of going to be like the salary cap that you see in the NFL because there is a 10-year deal with kind of with this salary cap, and it's only going to increase over time, kind of like the NFL salary cap. But this deal also gives the industry's most powerful conferences an increased ability to police NIL, aka name, image, and likeness, between athletes and boosters. So the judge in this House settlement, her name is Claudia Wilkin, she is concerned about a few things. But she asked lawyers from both sides to rethink a provision that would place a limit on how many athletes could be on a school's roster for each sport. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. She also wanted more detailing on how future athletes could object to terms of NIL deals once they are able to enroll in college, because it is becoming increasingly more likely that, it is likely, and it was actually passed, I believe, at the end of March, but athletes are going to be able to negotiate NIL deals before they get to college, so they know what they're working with and what they will be getting once they attend a specific college. There is a concern that the settlement could lead to, if this settlement were to pass, that this settlement could lead to the elimination of thousands of roster spots across Division I teams. I don't think you have to worry about sports like football and men's basketball, maybe even women's basketball. I think this more so affects the Olympic sports, your swimming, your track and field, your gymnastics, things like that. Because there's a current rule in place by the NCAA that places limits on the number of scholarships that a team can give their players. This rule would go away if the settlement is approved, meaning that a school can provide a full scholarship to every one of its athletes if it chooses to do so. So to keep the wealthiest of schools from stockpiling talent, the NCAA has proposed to limit the number of players each team can keep on its roster, which will mean teams will have to cut players, and I think this especially affects your walk-ons. I spoke with a family member of a current walk-on at an SEC school, and he told me that there is hope for his kid to be able to earn a scholarship within the next year because of things like this House settlement, because if it were to pass, a school can give a scholarship to anybody it wants to. So, but I do worry, and this is my perspective. I do worry about how this will affect walk-ons. What Judge Claudia Wilkin wants is for this idea to kind of be grandfathered in. So basically what that means is we're not going to cut walk-ons right away. We're going to allow them to play out their remaining eligibility, but we're not accepting new walk-ons. So eventually the idea of a walk-on will kind of get weeded out. But again, I worry about what will happen to walk-ons, because as college football fans, we can agree that the story of walk-ons that have been able to be successful, guys like Baker Mayfield, guys like that, you know, that their story started as a walk-on, and yet they were able to have so much success. So I do worry about that, because I think walk-ons are a instrumental part of the sport. Now, they may not get all the spotlight and all the attention, but they're still valuable assets to teams. So I do worry about that. And this is all going to get itself figured out, because Judge Wilkin is, as the article that I was reading earlier said, she is more than likely a few weeks away from granting a final decision. So we'll just have to continue to keep an eye on this and see how it monitors itself out. But that's just kind of the gist of what happened on Monday, April 7th. More meetings continued to take place. This one happened last week in Dallas as the CFP Management Committee met, and basically, they were discussing potential changes to the 2025 college football playoff format. As you can guess, because if something was decided, we all would be talking about it. But since we're not, that means that there was no vote on the potential playoff changes. So basically, they met last week in Dallas. They did not decide on making any potential playoff changes to the 12-team playoff, the format, or the seeding. So, just like I talked about with the House settlement, there was no decision made on this. And I didn't really expect anything from it either, because I don't think anybody is in any sort of hurry to make a decision, because, as we have talked about in previous shows, that the SEC and the Big Ten, the two most powerful conferences in the sport, they get full control of what the playoff will look like in 2026 and beyond. Whether that means four auto bids each for the SEC and the Big Ten, or whether that means straight seeding, I don't know. But they get full autonomy of what it will look like in 2026. Now, a lot of people have shared their opinion on this matter, and they advocate for straight seating. That was discussed last week in Dallas. Again, there was no vote. I don't think they're in any hurry, because, like I said, the SEC and the Big Ten get full authority of what this thing is going to look like moving forwards after this year. And to be frank with you, I don't really have an opinion on this, because, as you all know, I had a segment where I explained why I was against the college football playoff from the beginning, or from expanding. Not really the playoff necessarily that I was against. I was against the idea of having a 12-team playoff. And I'm not really going to get into that again. If you want, if you haven't or you missed it, you could go back and check that out. But I've just become numb to kind of all of this, because it seems like there's just so much chaos going on in college football, whether it be NIL, whether it be the transfer portal, which we're going to talk about quite soon. And when it comes to things like the playoff, I'm just kind of numb to it. Now, that doesn't necessarily affect how I view college football, because college football is a beast. Rome wasn't built in a day, neither was college football, so it can't be torn down in a day. But there are things that can tarnish it, and one of those, this is actually a perfect segue, and no, this was not intended, but it just kind of happened to work out this way. The transfer portal. The transfer portal is one of the things that can tarnish the image of college football, and it is out of control, guys. It is out of control. There's a winter window, which opens up in December, right before bowl season and the college football playoff starts. The spring portal, there's a spring portal that opens officially after the end of spring ball, which is actually getting ready to open up soon. So we're going to have to keep our eyes peeled to see who decides to enter the spring portal. My job is to follow this stuff, and I love following this stuff. I really do. But my gosh, I'm having a hard time keeping up with it. And I know this because I was watching ESPN the other day, and they had Jay Williams on, who's a ESPN college basketball analyst. And he was saying the same thing. He gets paid to cover college basketball, but yet he is having a hard time keeping track of this. And I can't necessarily fault him, because this their portal opened up during March Madness, smack dab in the middle of March Madness, and thousands upon thousands of athletes entered the portal while March Madness was being played. So I completely understand the struggle behind keeping up with who's all entered the portal, where are they committing, and it's just like, it almost doesn't even matter, because they could be on a completely different team in a year or so. So it's just like it's out of control, guys. It is out of control. And I really think it boils down to a couple things. One, the calendar is broken. And two, there are no guardrails. I'll start with the calendar. As I said, in football, the winter portal window opens up after conference championship weekend, right before bowls start and right before the college football playoff starts. That would be like the NFL opening free agency, the start of free agency, during the playoffs and throughout the Super Bowl weekend. And I'm asking a legit question, because I'm sitting here stunned, just trying to think about it. But what professional sport out there, whether that be the NFL, the MLB, the NBA, the NHL, are there any professional sports, major professional sports, that open up free agency during their postseason? Now, a lot of them do it in season. I know the NFL, they have a free agency period that opens midway through the regular season, but it is absurd if they decided to open free agency during the playoffs. And it's really just common sense. That's why they don't do it. But in college athletics, it is a complete free-for-all, and it's broken. Nobody in their right minds should have the portal window open up during bowl season, during the college football playoffs. You have guys like Bo Prabula, who was the backup quarterback at Penn State, having to enter the portal to go out and find a school before, and he ended up committing to Missouri, but he ended up having to go out and commit to Missouri before Missouri ended up getting somebody else. And coaches, they're having to worry about recruiting out of the portal on top of getting guys committed from the high school ranks. They're having to worry about all of this while preparing for a bowl game, while preparing for a playoff game. It's no wonder. I've been a huge advocate for coaches, because honestly, like, we've talked about Dan Lanning getting his contract extension. We've talked about Deion Sanders. We've talked about guys like Ryan Day, Kirby Smart. those guys getting paid at the top of the sport, Steve Sarkisian at Texas, I've said on the show, I don't think they're getting paid enough because they're having to deal with all of this. I've brought up Shane Beamer at South Carolina, who has talked about he honestly has to delegate some of the X's and O's talk to his assistant coaches because he has to go out and have meetings with boosters and dinners with alumni. And most of his job, or I don't know if I'm going to say most of his job, but a lot of his job, a lot of his time is consumed by that kind of stuff. And then X's and O's kind of gets what's left over of Shane Beamer. It's broken. I'm advocating for one transfer portal window. And in my ideal world, I would have everything wrapped up. The playoff, the national championship, I would have everything wrapped up by New Year's Day, January 1st. I would love it if we played our national championship game on January 1st. That way, because if you notice this year with the playoff format, the playoff lasted so long, by the time we got to the national championship game, a lot of fans were checked out because some of them even forgot that a national championship game was even being played on the day that it was. And that's because I feel like the college football playoff lost some steam, lost its momentum because it was so spread out. If we kind of condensed it and played it like right after conference championship weekend ended and we wrapped up by January 1st, I believe we would be able to retain the momentum of the playoff and end at a reasonable time, open up the window right before spring classes start, allow guys to enter the portal if they so wish, and be able to commit to a school and get there by the time classes start. And if worse comes to worse, what, they miss a week of class, but they're still able to kind of make up for it. That would be my ideal world, because I don't believe we should have a spring portal window where you practice with a team in the spring. Okay, you decide to leave, you go to another school, and then you missed out on spring practice with whatever team that you decided to go to. I hate that idea because I've talked about the importance of spring and how important it was for me as a player and how important it is for guys who are at this current level. I believe spring practice is when you develop that chemistry with your new teammates, and it is vital heading into a season. I wish there was a way that we could incentivize athletes to stay at a school. And what I mean by that is I'm not against players leaving and going to another school, because there are certain cases where those types of things are necessary, whether it benefits the player or they're going closer to their families. Like, I get it. Like, you know, this still is real life. These, yes, they're players, but they're also humans too, and there's a human element to this game. There are certain cases where guys have to leave and go to a different school. I get it. I'm not against that. I am not against players making money, believe it or not. What I am against is having a complete free-for-all where we see guys transferring to three or four schools in the span of 4 years. That's what I'm against. And again, if this were my ideal world, I would love to incentivize players to where we see a guy, okay, he commits to a school, maybe doesn't play a whole lot as a freshman, but he stays. He stays at a school, right? He's still making a little bit of money as a freshman. Okay, now as a sophomore, he's getting a little bit more playing time. Oh, and then his NIL starts to go up a little bit. Then by the time he's a junior, he's really playing and he becomes a star by his senior year. I love to see stories like that. And honestly, I think the idea of, okay, a guy makes a little bit of money as a freshman. If he stays at that same school, okay, he makes a little bit more as a sophomore. Then he stays at the school as a junior, makes a little bit more money. And then by the time his senior year rolls around, he is making as much money as possible, all while staying at the school, trusting those coaches to develop him. I think that's a beautiful situation. Now, I understand that is not the case for everybody. Joe Burrow transferred from Ohio State to LSU. If he never would have transferred, we never would have got the story of Joe Burrow. Who knows where Joe Burrow would be today? But that is just an ideal situation for some athletes. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. But this whole calendar, transfer portal, it's got to be fixed because it tarnishes the overall product that is college football if there are no guardrails. Now, college football is very resilient. It is still the greatest sport in the world. I know it will always continue to be that, at least in my mind. But college football, the product can be tarnished over the years. I want to give you an example. Does anybody know when National Signing Day was this year? If I asked you, hey, when was the February signing day? When was National Signing Day? Could you give me the exact day? Probably not, because I'm hearing crickets in the background. And no, that's not just because I'm sitting in an empty studio. I can hear the crickets. I can hear the crickets. Trust me. But I remember growing up as a college football fan, and National Signing Day was about as close to Christmas as you could get without it actually being Christmas. Because it used to be verbal commitments meant something. They meant something. If a player commits to a school back in the day, let's say 10, 15 years ago, it meant something. Now, if a player verbally commits to a school, who knows? Another school could come in offering more money and that player could flip his commitment. We see it all the time. We see it all the time. But that is just a small example because National Signing Day used to be a really big thing. Now, I woke up on the morning of National Signing Day and forgot. I forgot it was National Signing Day. So that is just a small example of something that used to be big, but then over time, like, people just forgot about it. I hope that doesn't happen to college football because we need guardrails. We need things in place. We need order. There's order when you're driving out on the street. There are rules. And can you think of anything in life that it could be business, it could be your job, it could be school, whatever. Can you think of anything in life that is successful, but yet there is complete chaos reigning and there are no rules or guardrails? Because I can't think like that. But apparently to some people, It can fly in college football, and I'm here to tell you that it can't. We need guardrails. We need rules. I told you that was going to be a spicy conversation. But I want to move into one more thing before I wrap up the show here. As you all know, I have been very high on Texas Tech going into 2025, and that is not going to change. Because they are, as I last checked, the number one overall transfer portal ranking this past cycle. And they just added to it as they landed Stanford transfer outside linebacker David Bailey. Many of you, I'm assuming, don't know much about him because he played at Stanford, but this dude is legit. He was a former freshman All-American, 6'3", 250-pound edge rusher, totaled 111 tackles, 22.5 tackles for loss, 14.5 sacks over three seasons. With the Cardinal, he has one more year of eligibility remaining, and he was the top available player in the portal. Now, he was able to enter the portal at this time because his former coach, Troy Taylor, was fired at Stanford. So there's a rule right now in place that if your coach gets fired, you have a small window to enter the portal. David Bailey, this was the case with him. Texas Tech has now added two of the top outside linebackers on the market in Bailey, and they also added Georgia Tech transfer Romello Height, who is a very exciting player. The Red Raiders brought in four more top 75 players in the transfer rankings. UCF defensive tackle Lee Hunter, North Carolina offensive lineman Howard Sampson, Illinois State offensive lineman Hunter Zambrano, and Miami, Ohio wide receiver Reggie Virgil. Texas Tech raking them in. They needed some help on that defensive line. They went out and got it. They needed some help on the trenches and the offensive line. They got it. They went out and got some receivers and some corners because they needed help in the secondary as well. They went out and got it. And I explained, I want to be very clear on this again. Texas Tech, I'm not predicting them to win the national championship. I'm not even saying that they're going to be a contender for the national championship. What I am saying is Texas Tech is very much a contender to make the playoff because, as you all know now, we are now allowing, 24 teams in the playoff? I say that sarcastically. I know we allow 12. But there are more opportunities for teams to make the playoffs. And the Big 12, man, the Big 12 is about as unpredictable as it gets in college football. And I honestly think it's the same way in college basketball. The Big 12 is very entertaining to watch because it's very up and down. You don't know who's going to be good. You don't know who's going to be bad. There's a team that could surprise you. Arizona State was that team last year because they were picked to finish 17th in the Big 12 preseason poll. And last time I checked, they ended up earning the fourth seed, the first round bye in the college football playoff, took Texas down to the wire, almost made the semifinals, and they would have played Ohio State. That is the Big 12. That is the Big 12. A lot of teams that we predicted, like Utah and Kansas State and Arizona, a lot of us were high on them heading into last season. They ended up finishing, at least for Utah and Arizona, close to the bottom of the conference. Meanwhile, Kansas State was somewhere near the top, but definitely not the top team. So that is just the Big 12 for you. It is very unpredictable. Texas Tech had a pretty good season, I would say, last year, and they went out and got some positional needs of value, and they returned a lot of production. Very high on what Joey McGuire has done in Lubbock because he's got us talking about Texas Tech in April. Texas Tech, not Texas Tech basketball. We're talking Texas Tech football. So I think he's done out and done a great job. USC, another team that is continuing to get it done in recruiting, but this time in the high school ranks. Are you aware right now that the Trojans currently have the number one recruiting class in 2026? They went out and got Deshaun Radue, a four-star running back, and I apologize if I mispronounced that name. He's a four-star running back out of Oaks Christian in California. He committed to the team last week. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this game, but I know his last name is Tapoy. Four-star defensive lineman out of Modern Day. He committed last week. He actually flipped from Oregon. They went out and got a three-star offensive tackle out of Folsom, California. He committed today, actually. Jake Johnson, a three-star defensive lineman out of Texas, committed a couple days ago. And Cohen Brown, a three-star wide receiver, also out of Texas, committed last week. So here's the thing about USC recruiting, because they have been able to get guys to verbally commit. The problem is pushing those guys across the finish line. That is something that USC has struggled with. But as it stands right now, they currently have the number one overall class. And my thing for USC is they are in one of the most talent-rich states in the United States of America in terms of football talent. They could not be located in a more perfect venue than Southern California. They just breed athletes down there. USC, they went out and recruited a bunch of guys from states like Georgia and Florida last season. A lot of those guys, yeah, they committed to USC at first, but then they ended up wanting to stay a little bit closer to home and committed to places like Georgia and Florida, things like that. So USC, why would you focus so hard on going out and recruiting states like Florida, Georgia, and Texas and things like that when you can just go into your backyard and get guys to stay home? And I think that's what USC has done, at least with the first three guys I mentioned. Those guys are all out of California and very productive players in high school. But you got to focus on getting guys from Southern California because those guys will really help your team because football is just a little bit different in California. And they've also been able to supplement guys. Now, you still have to recruit other states. You can't just solely focus on California. And that's what they've done because the last two guys I mentioned were from Texas. So you go out and you mainly focus on recruiting California. Then you supplement from other states and you get guys from Texas. And we all know Texas really doesn't mess around with high school football. So I think it is good for USC, but the question is, will they be able to push these guys across the finish line? That remains to be seen. But I think as it stands right now, if these guys are able to get them across the finish line, I think it's a huge win for Lincoln Riley. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Lincoln Riley because his tenure at USC has been up and down, as most know. But what are your thoughts on Lincoln Riley? If I asked you, hey, what do you think of Lincoln Riley at USC? What would you say to me? Because I can tell you what I think. In fact, that's what I'm going to do. I think Lincoln Riley has really struggled at USC. USC, despite what some may think, is still very much a national brand. Because, again, these football programs and the cultures and stuff like that, they're not built overnight. And USC, they were dominant. Just like early in the 2000s with Reggie Bush and then guys like Matt Leiner. And USC football is still very much a national brand, even though they haven't had the success over the past couple of years that's necessarily backed that up. But you also got to remember, I mean, 3 years ago they did have a Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback, so it's not like they're completely just, you know, empty pockets, you know? So Lincoln Riley, his last 2 years at USC, they're coming off a bowl win over Texas A&M. A very impressive win if you were able to stay up that late and watch. But Lincoln Riley is an offensive mastermind. We all know that. We all know the guys that he's coached, the quarterbacks that he's coached. But the issue with Lincoln Riley coach teams has been primarily what? I would say the defensive side of the ball. Now, this was just a mistake bringing over Alex Grinch from Oklahoma to USC, and we all know that he is trying to correct that because Alex Grinch was let go before the end of last season. They brought in UCLA defensive coordinator Danton Lynn, who was a slam dunk hire. He was able to go out and get a guy like Matt Entz, who was the head coach at North Dakota State, to be the linebackers coach at USC. So there, he's trying to get this right. He's trying because Lincoln Riley's not an idiot. He knows that the defensive side of the ball needs some help. So he went out and he acquired better defensive coaches to help him out on the defensive side of the ball. And also, too, what many of you don't realize is the alignment has to be right between the school's athletic director and the president and the school chancellor and things like that. And Lincoln Riley has talked about that, how he doesn't necessarily that their visions have been aligned, but I think that they're starting to work a little bit closer together and the alignment is slowly starting to morph into form and everything's becoming a little bit clearer among the coaches and the athletic staff at USC. So I certainly think that there is optimism if you are a USC fan. And I don't think it's time to punt on Lincoln Riley because we all know the success he had at Oklahoma. He was basically handpicked to be the heir to the throne by Bob Stoops. Now, if I'm talking to an Oklahoma fan, you're not happy about the way that he left Norman. I get it. But if we're talking about the quality of coach that Lincoln Riley is, I don't think it's time to sell your stock on him. That's all I'm saying. And if they're able to push this recruiting class across the finish line, it would be a monumental win for the Trojans. We covered a lot of ground on today's episode of the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Make sure, again, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Game Nashville podcast, where you will see each and every episode of the Air Raid. Also, I forgot to mention this at the start, but please, if you haven't already, also follow me on the socials. I'm at Twitter. I'm at Instagram at Parker_Kelly10. That's where you can find me. And we will continue to pump out content because there is no slowing down in college football. We've got a lot to unpack on future shows, but been a really busy time of year, especially in the sports world. But again, we're gonna keep this thing rolling. So I really appreciate all the listeners, and again, we'll have another episode here for you shortly.